In the year 2000, Marvel Comics revolutionized their entire product line by launching a whole new line aimed at a new age group, the Millennials. And now, 25 years later, they've got a whole new line aimed at the Millennials. We're talking about Ultimate Spider-Man 2024. Everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are doing a little comic catch up. My name is Drew, and joining me is a dude that may be a bad guy, can't really tell. Miles, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing good. Or am I?
No, I'm doing well.
I'm happy to be talking comics yet again, which I'm just happy that we're talking comics. We were talking off air about how we have been so bad about keeping up with so many books that we love and have bought and have spent lots of money on. Going back, I have like 2 years of like the regular Batman book to read.
Same, and Detective Comics. I'm in the exact same boat. It's driving me.
And they're both restarting now with one Tom Taylor doing Detective and Chip Zdarsky doing Flagship Batman.
Pause for a moment just to talk about Batman and just talk about Chip Zdarsky, because man,
he's written Spider-Man.
He's written a couple of versions of Spider-Man. He had a Daredevil run for a while, but the fact that the first time I ever saw his name on anything was doing the art for the comic Sex Criminals, which
yes.
is a comic that is very difficult to talk about out loud unless everybody already knows what that comic is.
Right. Unless you're in a comic book shop or in the graphic novel section, saying the word Sex Criminals at any octave is... it gets you looks in public.
Yeah, which is
especially
why
you said, "Oh man, I love Sex Criminals."
Which for the record, that book is great. But Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky, one of the best parts of that book is the two of them doing the letters section together, because they have a great vibe working together, and it's fantastic. But that he went from that to just. Now he's done a whole bunch of stuff in Marvel. He's doing a whole bunch of stuff in I mean, obviously he's about to do Batman. Like, Zdarsky.
I also love seeing these like super indie guys like Zdarsky and Ryan North, who started off just kind of like in the jokey realm and get the chance to do something. And like it started with like jokey stuff like Squirrel Girl or Howard the Duck, where like they took their jobs very seriously and made amazing books.
Chip Zdarsky's Howard the Duck is phenomenal. And the way that he treats Spider-Man in that book is so, so good. Just do yourself a favor. Just go. Did we cover it on the show? I feel like we covered it.
We have not.
Years ago. But anyway, let's get into what we're actually talking about today. And that is
yes.
the relaunch of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yes, this is technically the third iteration, possibly fourth volume, of Ultimate Spider-Man, the one that kicked off the Ultimate Universe in the year 2000, because Marvel decided there is this idea to get people into comics, you have to allow them to start from the very beginning. People always have this assumption that if I'm going to get in, I have to start from the very beginning. And there's 600 issues. And I always tell people, no, you don't. You absolutely do not. Now, if you want someone to help you, absolutely. Wikipedia is your best friend. Read some stuff that sounds interesting. Grab that story. Like, it really is. And I've always been that kind of person. Like, ever since I was a kid, like, it's not just shove, oh, here's the big story in your face. It's like, well, what do you want to read? And their idea was, okay, let's approach it like we would if we had an infinite budget to make a Spider-Man movie that took place now. That was kind of the impetus of Ultimate Spider-Man. What if Spider-Man happened in the year 2000? And it launched a massive universe. It put Brian Michael Bendis on the map as a superstar writer. Ultimate Spider-Man was Marvel's biggest book for quite some time. I actually sold the copy of Ultimate Spider-Man number one for $105 on eBay back in the day.
Ooh, ooh, big money.
And that's $105 in like 2002 money.
Yeah, that's like worth $97 now.
Well,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
But it was a massive, massive book. And of course, like all these books, you know, the freshness wears off. And then some of the ideas, as people kind of pass, grow a little stale. To me, Ultimate Spider-Man stayed consistent because you had a singular creative team at the helm for over 100 issues. And then you still had Brian Michael Bendis kind of spearheading everything and helping create Miles Morales, who has become one of the biggest stars of, certainly the biggest new character aside from Kamala that's been introduced in the last 15 years.
Yeah, for sure.
And eventually all these characters that worked got phased into 616 and they destroyed the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, well.
And then they destroyed it again because they had some sort of like event that helped create this particular version of the Ultimate Universe. But I was like, this universe already died.
Well, this
so I was very, very confused by all that.
Yeah, it's a different Ultimate Universe, but this is one that, speaking of destroying the Ultimate Universe, one of the Ultimate Universe's sort of weirdest inclusions was an evil version of Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, the ultimate version of Reed Richards.
Yes, who ended up becoming an evil character throughout the continuity called the Maker. And that is where this whole new Ultimate Universe spins off, is that he has gone to another universe and he basically used his powers to prevent all of the superheroes from existing so that he could create a world that he could kind of fully 100% control with all of his super intelligence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And what's so cool about this is when they announced this, I was like, oh, here we go again. We're going to try this old chestnut. Except they didn't. Every Ultimate book they've announced, which I know there's X-Men. Is there Ultimate Iron Man?
Well, Iron Man, there is Ultimate Avengers or the new Ultimates or something like that, because Iron Man is a big part of
the story.
Backstory of what we get. But I don't know, again, because I've only read the first six issues of this. I don't know how far we've gone in.
So I was expecting kind of the same old, same old. Until they released the kind of log line for the new Ultimate Spider-Man, we are not getting nerdy teenaged Peter Parker. We are getting 40-year-old dad Peter Parker. Beard and everything, which has to itch under that mask.
Yeah, that's my biggest weird like complaint about that is, how does he deal with the mask and the beard? Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I say that this is again targeted at millennials, it's because we were teenagers when the first Ultimate came out, and now we're all, you know, old men, and Spider-Man, once again, one of everybody's favorite like personal stand-in characters, is an old man, father of two, smoking hot wife who backs him up on everything he does, like
so far.
But yeah, it's really different. And in the same way that we have a Spider-Man who has not been Spider-Man this entire time, he doesn't get his powers until the end of the first issue, which again is also kind of interesting that we spend the entire first issue just sort of setting up the world and sort of reveal. So basically, Iron Man in this universe was blamed for this event that killed thousands of people in New York. One of those people was, unfortunately, Aunt May. However, in this universe, because Peter didn't get bit by the spider and the events of the story didn't go down the way they did before, Uncle Ben is still very much alive and one of the key people working at the Daily Planet newspaper.
Yeah, basically the kind of partner, the second in command to JJ, who happens to also be like his best friend.
Yeah, it's such
a weird... Which is so good.
I love it.
It is such a wonderful choice. All right, you're going to hear Drew and I gush. I haven't talked about this book that much with Drew, other than the fact that I remember enjoying the first issue. I think this book is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I think it does things... So Spider-Man 1, I was a little concerned about because we've already had, like, the Spider-Verse. And so I've already read a bunch of iterations of Spider-Man. So I was a little concerned on how this book was going to stand apart from those. You know, I loved Miles. I love Spider-Gwen. I like a lot of the other Spider-Verse inductees. But the main difference, with the exception, I would say, of Gwen and Miles, is a lot of those books, you get a little bit of an adventure. You get some cool flavoring, you know, but you don't really get the meat and potatoes of who they are.
There's a lot of caricatures of Spider-Verse characters. They're yes. more caricatures than characters. And not to say that that's true for all of them, but a lot of them are like, oh, hey, here's Cowboy Spider-Man. And so let's have an adventure with Cowboy Spider-Man.
Here's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. I loved Spider-Man.
But it is a novelty.
But it's a novelty, yeah.
I also love Spider-Man. But
Spider-Man, for those who don't know, is a collective consciousness group of spiders that live inside a Spider-Man costume.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's very stupid, but it's awesome.
It's very stupid. It's very creepy, but it's also awesome.
What this book did was take Peter Parker, put him in a, and take out what made the character Spider-Man in terms of the radioactive spider, but it did not take the spirit of the character out. And I love this because this is actually a really important part of this book, because in the first issue, he's consistently saying something in my life is missing. There is something that I am meant to do and I don't know what it is. Like the Maker or Reed Richards took away his destiny, but that destiny is still kind of itching in the back of his brain and he just doesn't know what it is. Like, he doesn't know anything. And it's so well done.
And this could be played so easily as midlife crisis Spider-Man.
Which was my concern going in.
Which they walk that line so carefully to the point where basically it comes down to, Iron Man figures out what's going on 6 months ago and sets up these magical boxes.
Protocols.
These magical boxes to send to all of these heroes to you know, awaken their powers. So inside Spider-Man's is a vial with the spider in it to bite him and give him powers. But it's
tell you what, though, I'd probably still have a tough time putting that thing on my hand and be like, all right, bite me. This is going to suck. I'm probably going to squash you afterwards. But
but what I also love is the different looks at other characters outside of just Peter Parker and Mary Jane. Of course, we talked a little bit about Ben and JJ's just being old newspaper bros.
I know. I love JJ basically being the Ben Urich of this book.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one who believes in truth, who believes in the news, and does not believe in what's happening around him. And I'm worried that they're setting this up for one of them to die. Honestly. Which,
I mean, you know, it's one of those things we're going to have to keep reading, I guess. But I also love that, one, Mary Jane and Peter's marriage is in a good place. It's mm-hmm. not them like on the rocks.
On the rocks. Yeah.
It's not them on the rocks because he's, you know, he's kind of da 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 da. He's a good dad. His kids seem good and very well adjusted, etc. But then you also see these other characters like Wilson Fisk, who plays a big part of this, because although the Maker robbed all of the superheroes of their powers, didn't seem to rob all the supervillains of theirs. Because he can use those people to control what's going on, as we see with Wilson Fisk. I also love at the sort of memorial for the event that destroyed, you know, a portion of New York and killed thousands of people. The priest that they have speaking there is Matt Murdock, who is still blind, just without any powers.
Yes. And I'm waiting for that to change, for one.
Well, I mean, it's because, again, you know, apparently we find out
we don't know that he doesn't have powers, actually.
That's true. We don't know.
We haven't spent any time with Matt Murdock. He just gives a commencement speech at this memorial for those who died. Is it 6 months or a year later?
I can't even remember. It has not been long from what we
can tell. I think it's been a year.
I think it's 6 months because that would match up. Because
Tony says he went back in time 6 months or something like that.
I'm coming from six months past.
Yeah.
So
I really love, like, I would read a whole book about Ben and JJ setting up a paper, to be honest.
Their
interactions are great. And I love, and this might have been informed by the Spider-Verse movies, but I love that May is the one that knows that he's Spider-Man.
Oh, little Mayday. She's not Mayday. She's just May, little May.
Yeah, she's May Parker. May and Richard.
Well, and she's pretty, that's kind of a fun thing too, because when Peter gets his powers and he gets a Picotech suit, like a bunch of nanite suit from Tony Stark as part of this, but the default colors are just black.
Yeah.
And as a result, May is kind of scared of this being
Spider-Man.
Well,
yeah.
Doesn't have a name yet either.
Doesn't have a name yet. No, but like she's scared of this guy.
Yeah. And even more so when she finds that guy eating ice cream on her couch in the living room, but that's also something I love, that you have May sort of like him consoling and comforting and sort of realizing he's screwed up by just being that careless with what's going on. And then ultimately having her keep that secret from MJ and Richard, his older son, who is, I'm not exactly sure how old he is. I don't think he's a teenager. I think he's probably like,
but he certainly feels like one. He's like one of those well-read like 12-year-olds,
yeah,
who like is wise beyond his years. Do you want to watch TV? No, good boy.
Because he reads books all the time, which is just an interesting thing, and you know, takes after his father, who was very, very intelligent. And that's one thing I feel like we didn't get in this six issues is Peter's like scientific prowess.
Well, the thing is, you know, we know he went the photographer route. He is a photographer for the Daily Bugle and possibly, you know, other publications in the future. We'll see. But I don't mind that we didn't get every answer about every aspect of Peter's life. Because I think I think this book does such a good job both establishing a very, very good and well-developed ensemble cast as well as the world building. Like, the heavy lifting this book does and the subtle nature within which it does, that is, frankly, masterful. Like, yeah. I mean, I know John Hickman is an excellent writer.
Yeah, we should probably mention this book is written by Jonathan Hickman, who the last thing I read of Jonathan Hickman was the Dawn of and Powers of X.
He did a lot of the X-Men stuff that I loved.
Fantastic. The whole Krakoa era was kicked off by this dude, and now he's kicking off Ultimate Spider-Man Part 3.
Why I was initially interested. I'm like, well, Hickman doesn't really phone it in. So, and he does, I mean, I remember kind of, this is going to sound silly, but I remember getting kind of like emotional reading this book, because it's a great moment, but it wasn't a specific thing. It was just like, this is what it's supposed to feel like to read comics.
Yeah.
Like this is what I always felt like. And you're just in this universe and all these characters are so good. And they're not just doing the thing that the original Ultimate Universe did, which was, oh, this is introducing you to the movie version of our kid Peter Parker, and we're going to adapt all the main major stories.
Yeah.
You know, because they did like the initial Green Goblin saga, the Venom saga, Carnage, the Sinister Six, all that stuff. And there were always some twists and stuff, but we were always watching a remixed version of a story that has been previously told. This is very different. Harry and Peter were not best friends growing up. They don't really meet properly until like issue 3 of this book,
which we got to talk about. We have to talk about Harry. We do have to talk about Harry because he's a huge part of this book, at least for right now too. But I have to talk about Peter's first encounter with the new Shocker.
Honestly, every encounter with the new Shocker is so good.
It's so good because this is a Peter who is he's older. He's in his mid to late 30s. I think they clock him at 35 in the book. A young man by my standing. God, it's true. Anyway,
yeah, 6 years ago.
But he hasn't learned the lessons. He's learning the lessons that you would think a kid would learn, in that you have this Shocker who's like, "Oh man, thank you for stopping me from robbing this bank. I just didn't, you've talked me out of it. You've talked me out of it." And he's like, "Oh, really? For real?" And then he gets blasted.
Yeah. No, I love that this is like, yeah, he's a little naive, but he also like, I love how they don't immediately like, oh yeah, he's automatically good at this. Like, he doesn't really know how to fight. He doesn't even know how to land.
He doesn't know how to land, which is something that, you know, we have seen.
The movies cover sometimes.
We've seen the movies cover his ability to land or not land.
Yeah, the Tobey Maguire one did it. I'm pretty sure the Andrew Garfield one did it. And he's already Spider-Man by the time we meet Tom Holland.
Yeah.
I loved this, though, because, again, they're throwing curveballs, but it's not just a twist for the sake of a twist. It really feels like Jonathan Hickman had an idea and had a way to execute this in a way that is both fresh, unique, but still has the heart of a Spider-Man story in a way that, and maybe is because we are closer to the age of the character, but, like, I'm constantly finding interesting. And it is always a testament to how good a writer is when the slice of life, daily life of these characters is just as interesting, just as important, and just as dynamic to read, especially, you know, in a sequential art storytelling book, than the superhero antics. Like, there's actually very little superhero antics for the most part. Even big moments are not the big part of the book.
Yeah. In fact, one of the key moments to me is the dinner scene. But to talk about the dinner scene.
So good. We got to talk about how they meet. How Harry met Peter.
So basically, Harry meets Peter. Well, we get the idea because we've been introduced to Wilson Fisk as, you know, the kingpin of New York, as he is in the main comics.
And unlike most versions, he loves being called that.
Oh yeah, but he also is being targeted by some thing that is trying to blow him up. And those things look a bit like Green Goblin bombs. So what we find is in one of these instances where, so Peter, having been beaten up by the Shocker multiple times, goes looking for him, but ends up finding the Shocker fighting this dude in a green armor suit that looks kind of Iron Man-ish, and they fight together and they have a good battle and they capture Shocker. It's like, hey, oh no, it's when they're fighting, it's when he's fighting Bullseye. Sorry, because the Bullseye in this is also really freaking crazy and weird.
Which also makes me, I was very curious about Bullseye because I got the impression that he may not be from this universe.
It feels like he may not be from this universe, or that he's got some sort of deeper connections to like a hand style,
like, yeah,
cult situation thing going on. But they defeat Bullseye, and, you know, it's like, oh, I've never captured anybody before. I don't know what to do next. And what we instantly learn is that this person in green who also does not have a name, realizes there's a similar moment. There's something similar about their respective costumes, because if you zoom in on his suit, it's got an Oscorp Stark branding on it,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting. Because yeah, he just realizes, oh, this suit was made by Tony Stark. I could just turn it off. And he turns off Peter's mask on the roof of this building.
Yeah, because he has the ability to see the technology. And he even says, yeah, what you have is And then he punches his wrist, proprietary, and the mask goes away. It is a baller moment.
It's a great moment. But luckily, he then removes his own helmet, and they get to really meet for the first time. And it's Peter Parker, photojournalist for the Daily Bugle, meeting Harry Osborn, son of the late Norman Osborn, because Norman was killed in that same explosion as Aunt May.
It's such a great panel because it takes up most of the page, and it's done in a way that, like, there have been so many, like, head-to-head shots of Green Goblin versus Spider-Man. And it's the first time that you see them, not the first time, because, you know, Harry's had a checkered past in the 616 universe, as has, I'm blanking on the hero version of Green Goblin. Phil something. And it doesn't matter. Because no one read that book but me.
yeah, I was going to say.
Instead, these are two heroes. And I like that Harry has been portrayed as a hero.
Well,
because
he
without the goblin juice and without some of the problems of that was associated with Norman Osborn, you don't have Harry going mad.
But you do have Harry is not a perfect person.
No. He's certainly troubled.
Because, I mean, though we talk about Harry as a hero, he's still trying to kill Wilson Fisk. He's still trying to kill him with his bombs.
Yes. Oh, I mean, he's flat out. He's doing what needs to be done to him, but he sees it more like the Punisher. And yeah. And Spidey is still like, we can't break in, can we? That's breaking the law.
I've never broken a law before.
Yeah, like 35-year-old Peter Parker, who was never Spider-Man, is you take all the Spider-Man stuff away, and oh wow, that kid remained a big nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's talk about this dinner scene, because after they defeat Bullseye, Harry's like, you want to get a beer?
And they do. And they do. And it starts. And that's the other thing about these issues is that we start off with a January, February, March. Like there's a month passing through these issues, each issue, that there's stuff that happens off page that we don't know. And apparently Peter and Harry have, you know, I don't know that they've gotten close, but they've definitely become pretty good allies to each other.
Yeah, they've certainly become friendly. They are buddies. You said the first issue takes place in January, right?
I think it's January.
Yeah, that book launched January 2024.
Hey, how about that?
Yeah, they're trying to like present this almost like in real time, which is pretty cool.
That's awesome. I like it. But Harry invites Peter and his wife out to dinner at this super fancy restaurant. Where we are also going to meet Harry's wife, who happens to be Gwen Stacy Osborne.
I love it. I also love that it's like, oh, it's Gwen from high school. Nope.
No.
And they at least don't claim to know each other.
which is weird that she wouldn't have been there. But I guess.
But neither was Harry, I guess. So
neither was Harry. So I guess whatever, you know, machinations that the Maker did behind the scenes just changed people's trajectories in other ways. But
yeah,
but this dinner scene between MJ and Gwen and Harry and Peter is so like funny and fun, but intense and scary.
Well, because there is a tension there because every single person in the room is feeling the other person out. You know, Peter is certainly trying to feel out, like, you know, okay, what's the deal with this Harry Osborn character? Because they're buds, but they're not buds.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harry's trying to figure what makes Peter tick. Gwen is kind of doing everything. Gwen is like, you get the impression that she's got teeth on her.
Yeah, I mean she's. I mean, I know this phrase is you know, she's girl bossing, basically. She is.
Yeah, I wish you hadn't said that, but I get you mean.
Yeah, but like it, because she is like she's this powerful executive and at Oscorp, and so is Harry technically. But it's also like their backgrounds are so different now than Peter and Mary Jane's, where MJ, we learned, did do some modeling, but ended up going into crisis management. The business side,
yeah.
Crisis management, which is such a, like, that's such a corporate term. Well, so
she went on one point to do PR and got kind of stuck doing a crisis manager because she was kind of lied to about what the place was. And then she decided to bet on herself and has been doing kind of freelance PR, essentially. Yeah. And...
But when I say that they're from different backgrounds, it's like Harry and Gwen are clearly in these very authentically, in my opinion, written as people who have been dealing with like the up and comers, the rich and powerful, always trying to get a bead on people and always trying to be the most talented person in the room or figure out how they can get one up somebody else and all of this stuff that happens when you have wealth and money and like Succession. They're acting like Succession characters.
They are to a degree, but it's, I think it comes more of a place of like,
they don't know any other way to operate.
Well, there's that, but also I'm going to go on this crusade and I think I found someone I can go on this crusade with. Can I count on them? What are they like? Who are they? What makes them tick? And there are so many stakes in this dinner. And it's so multifaceted. Like this entire dinner could be a very excellent 90-minute film.
Oh, yeah,
like an indie film. And it is so deliciously written. And the art is fantastic. We hadn't even mentioned the pencilers. Marco Cicchetto and Dave Messina?
Yes, looks like it.
And... even the scene where like Gwen's like invites MJ to the bathroom and they have a little chit chat in there and you're like, okay, is this where like the something happens? And it's like, no, but she's trying to feel MJ out personally. And the whole thing is great.
And she changes tactics by like, am I coming on too strong out there? So I get in business mode and sometimes I can't turn it off.
I can't turn it off. And it's great.
But even that is like a tactic.
Calculated. You know? Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
It's calculated. Oh,
it's certainly calculated, but it's also like, you feel like she's being truthful. She probably can't turn it off. And we don't know the background of this Gwen Stacy at all. We don't know if she's still the daughter of a police captain or what. But while they're having their chat, then Harry brings up the superhero stuff and brings up the fact that, oh yeah, Gwen knows everything. We don't keep secrets.
We don't keep secrets.
Right, and he now. Even calls him. I was like, oh, you're going to give me the whole, I have to protect my family nonsense from what? And I was like, oh, this is so good. Again, Hickman has this way of undercutting expectations or turning tropes in a way that make it engaging. And it may not be a flat out surprise or shock, but it's so satisfying to read clearly a writer who's aware of reader expectations, the histories of the characters, and it's like, I'm playing with this, not the way you think I am, but you don't have to get too untrustworthy because I'm not trying to trick you, but I am trying to build something brand new and you need to come with me.
Yeah.
And there is no better, I think, like mission statement or kind of like mission, like not mission statement, like thesis for this book than that conversation right there of like, what is going to make this universe tick?
And it's interesting to me that it's in this moment between Harry and Peter at the table where the iconic Spider-Man line, with great power comes great responsibility.
And it doesn't sound cheesy. That's the best part.
But
it doesn't come off dumb.
But they add that extra little flavor to it. It's like, but only if you use it or something like that.
Or if you want it or something like that. Yeah.
And of course, then we after this, we do learn a little bit more about Harry's background. And because Harry speaks, we first see Harry in the book speaking at the memorial. He hasn't met Peter yet at this point, but he's basically telling this story. And this is some classic Harry Osborn dad drama. He tells this story about his favorite memory of his dad was when they played catch when he was a kid, and how at that moment it was just him and his dad, and it's the first time and last time they ever played catch, and neither of them were very good at it, but they just, he was the one thing that mattered to his dad in that moment was playing catch. And then we go to Harry's flashback issue, and we find out that their relationship was not close. It was not great. And
in fact, Harry says, Norman says, yeah, that's the memory of a boy. Yes. You're a man. I need you to be a man.
Yeah, he asks Harry what his favorite memory of him is. And Harry says, well, we played catch that time. And it's like, no, that's your favorite memory as a boy. I'm waiting for my favorite memory of you as a man, but it hasn't happened yet. And then boom, the building explodes. And that's the last thing that Norman and Harry ever say to each other. And it's like, imagine the trauma that hangs in the air in that moment. But he realizes that, oh, well, he's offered by the Kingpin to buy out Stark Stain. It's not Stark Enterprise or Stark Industries, Stark Enterprises. It's Stark Stain, which is like Obadiah Stain, the right. Ironmonger. To which he ends up doing, and then discovering the secret room that has all of the Iron Man suits in it. And he has his sort of crony super scientist that works for him, Dr. Otto Octavius, build him this Green Goblin suit, this special suit that he's been doing. But this is when we also learned that Harry didn't get a message from Iron Man. He didn't get a Tony Stark message. He's just figuring all this out. And he's also learned that there is a bunch of pings that have set off, seemingly in some sort of rotation. There's all sorts of other little Stark magic boxes that have appeared all over the city. And that's sort of where we end that story. But of course we end the final moment of now MJ, well, May accidentally reveals, because Peter has a black eye from a fight with the Kingpin. May accidentally reveals to that oh, it's when you're fighting the bad guy, right? It's like, fighting the bad guy, what's going on? And so now Richard Parker, the son, and MJ find out. Peter reveals it all to them. And in an interesting moment, MJ's not mad, because she sees that this is who he always has been, that he's always been a person that's tried to help people, and that this is just a part of that destiny. And that the conversation's not over, but she's not angry, because she's willing to let him take a shot on himself, because he's always supported her in taking a shot on herself. But she does demand that he swing her around town, which is where he's still struggling to find out a name. And he is wearing the more classic blue and red costume at this point. We kind of skipped over that because May helps him design the costume. That's a very sweet scene when you see him designing the different Spider-Man suits. And we even see the Scarlet Spider hoodie, or a version of the Scarlet Spider hoodie, which I thought was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was really fun. But she accused him of being old, trying to look cool. And yeah. I thought that was really funny.
It was very funny, because I've always been a huge fan of the classic Scarlet Spider hoodie.
You know I am.
But it's, of course, MJ that says, face it, Tiger. You're Spider-Man. It's like, I love their relationship right now. I love everything about what's happening in this book. And there's one other thing I kind of want to talk about, Miles.
What's that?
We got to talk about the paper.
The paper.
We don't know a lot about the paper yet, but the big thing about this is when you have a news story, of course, it's always been J. Jonah Jameson, I need pictures of Spider-Man. I need pictures of Spider-Man. And ironically, this J. Jonah Jameson doesn't need pictures of Spider-Man, because the Daily Bugle is posting pictures of Spider-Man all the time. But JJ and Ben Parker have quit working for the Daily Bugle, and they're starting their own old man online newspaper source called The Paper. And they realize that there is this other dude that's going around, and but using their years and years of like contacts and things like that, like a guy on the police force owed me a favor and let me know that this is what went down. That there is clearly something that the Bugle is covering up for by not covering the story about this other dude in green that's doing stuff, but only focusing on Spider-Man. And that is, and that's just an interesting, like, it's an interesting, like, 2025, you know, real news, you know, how you use the news media to manipulate things, Citizen Kane style story that I just enjoy that stuff. And we haven't even really seen that kick off by issue 6.
No, every moment we get with them is great. I like how they seem to be kind of infecting Peter's mind of like, oh no, you should join up with us too. And this idea, I like the idea that Hickman's not being secretive about, like, you know, keeping information about what's going on. Like, yeah. Ben and JJ certainly have an idea that something's going on. They don't know what the make or anything, but they know that Fisk is trying to control a narrative and they don't know for whom, and something stinks. And I love this aspect of, like, every aspect of this book is so well thought out and executed that, like, every place I go to, okay, this is where they're going to falter. They're going to drop the ball on these guys, or they're going to make the dinner kind of just fizzle out, or everything is great. The only thing that I was like, okay, I mean, this mirrors some things that happened even in the first Ultimate Spider-Man. Kingpin whoops both their asses. He has gotten some sort of dermal upgrade.
He's gotten some sort of, like, superpowered upgrade thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's gotten, like, some sort of like skin armor. Because, well, like, remember, one of the bombs doesn't affect him at all.
Yeah, there's something, but whether that affected his strength or not, or whether he's just actually super strong, I couldn't tell. Because he does give Peter a black eye, which we know is tough to do.
Yes. It's well done. I mean, but this is the one thing that I thought was like, okay, this is kind of well-worn territory. But it works for the story. Like, this was done in, like, the first, I think, like, 10 issues of the original Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it taught Peter a lesson that, hey, this is all fun, but you got to take this stuff seriously. And you can't just go in half-cocked, which is what he and Harry really do.
Yeah. But even at the end of these 6 issues, like, Peter is still very naive about everything mm-hmm. that's going on. And part of that is because Harry does know way more than he is letting on. He just hasn't necessarily revealed that to Peter yet. And the question is whether or not he's actually going to. And that's what I love about this version of Harry, is that he is effectively a good guy. He's trying to stop crime. He's trying to stop the bad guys in the city. But is he trying to stop them for the right reasons?
Right. And that's a question that I think will, like, loom for quite some time.
For sure.
So. And you're probably going to have a moment where they do break, because I would imagine that at some point Harry's going to have an opportunity to kill somebody. Don't know who. And Peter's going to stop him, and that's going to cause a rift between the two of them. They may not be enemies, but now Harry's like, well, I can't trust you.
Yeah. And I wish I had not scrolled down too far on this Wikipedia page that I was using for some quick notes to find out some reveals about some things, because, man, this book is going to go some places.
I'm excited to see where it goes. I did not do what you always do and spoil something for yourself. Like,
look, Miles,
you can't help yourself, man.
Miles, listen to me about this book.
Can't wait until Mike.
I own every issue of this book. I am subscribed to it on Comixology/Amazon/whatever.
That's fine.
I have read the first 3 issues of this book about 6 times. And I always, I think the farthest I've gotten is issue 7. I need to just make this is why we're doing this, because I need to get through the rest of this book.
Yeah, because we don't know how much longer this universe is going to last. They have set up Ultimate Endgame for the end of this year. Now, I don't know if that's going to actually end the universe, or that's just going to conclude the Stark Maker part of this. I don't know. Because this is not the first time we've had a middle-aged Spider-Man. There was the Renew Your Vows universe, which started off terribly. Like, Peter Parker turns tail on the Avengers during a major incursion where most of them die, because Venom might get to his wife in time. Hated that. When it went on its own and like did something, it's actually a very, very good book, but it was riddled with kind of issues like that. This does not have that. This is a very well-crafted, it doesn't feel like, I mean, obviously there was a movement to make a new Ultimate Universe and they pegged Hickman to start it off, but it doesn't feel, because Hickman's a good enough writer, he found a way so that it didn't feel like, okay, this is the new, you know, marketing push.
Yeah.
Because every other attempt to kind of rebrand, relaunch, reboot the Ultimate Universe has absolutely felt that way. And the fact that this doesn't, and it doesn't feel like, okay, I didn't read the event that got us here. It doesn't matter. They give you all the context you need. I don't have to go back and read that. I don't want to.
Yeah, I kind of don't. I don't love the Maker.
I've never liked the idea that Ultimate Reed Richards turned heel in such a stupid way. Because at first it was, oh, I'm doing this to save everybody. And then they turned into like some kind of Red Hood Joker looking Goomba. And I hate it. But
yeah, don't love it.
Maybe Harry will just brain him and that'll be the end of it. but I do love that like we're told this and we're given the context. I much prefer that. I actually would rather not have the have read Ultimate Invasion or Incursion or whatever it is.
Whatever it was.
Going in. In fact, I would encourage everyone else who hasn't read that, don't bother.
Yeah, don't do it.
Just start this book. This, you can know nothing about Spider-Man. And maybe you won't pick up why certain things work so well.
Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion is apparently just from last month, and it is Miles Morales going over or doing a crossover.
Yeah, they couldn't help themselves, could they?
Doing a crossover with this Peter.
They couldn't help themselves, but so Ultimate Invasion must have been the other one. I don't think you need any information about Spider-Man to like this. I mean, even if you've watched the movies, you know enough about Spider-Man to, you know, Peter Parker's Spider-Man, especially Spider-Man when he was a kid, the end. It doesn't matter if you know the deep history about Harry and Gwen. Does it help? Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, but it's so well told. It's so well executed. The art is excellent, and it's going into some really interesting places that we haven't been before. The fact that this book feels like a Spider-Man book, but is so wholly different from the 616 Spider-Man that we know and love, and especially with the goofy stuff they continue to do with him because they still won't undo the Brand New Day garbage. And now MJ's, well, she's been an Iron Person. Now she's Venom, I think. And we found out that Venom can be a submarine if she wants it to be.
What? I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
I'll show you after we stop recording. It's big dumb. It's big dumb.
Well, and they're about to make Spider-Gwen have been a part of the regular 616 for the entire time. That it's no longer an alternate universe Gwen Stacy, but it's going to be that 616 Gwen Stacy. But whether that's a temporary thing or a permanent thing, we don't know yet.
They can't help themselves. And that I think is the most attractive thing about imprints and exercises like this. It's what has always attracted me to Elseworld stories, to what ifs, is like getting this idea of like, okay, yeah, we know this thing, but like, I will say this. I am not necessarily against ongoing books, but I think sometimes ongoing books don't do themselves any favor. And things like, look, some of the best issues of all time have been these kind of like singular, you know, kind of quote unquote filler issues. But without a real proper vision, some of these things spin their wheels and we just get recycled characters, stories. And it's, I mean, Spider-Man especially, like the X-Men, big old soap opera. Always has been.
And you know, I agree with you because I can't remember whether we covered this on the show or not either. I think we did. We started this episode talking just randomly about Chip Zdarsky, but one of my favorite Spider-Man stories of the last 5 years has been Chip Zdarsky's, not For All Seasons. It was basically it was Spider-Man's story starting.
Oh, Yes.
Starting in the 60s, and each issue was the next...
Is it called A Day in the Life?
Not life story. I don't know.
It's something like that. I'm looking it up. You keep talking.
But yeah, it was each issue was a decade. So, or took place in a specific decade, starting with the 60s and 60s era Peter Parker getting bitten by the spider, and then going into the 70s and how the real world events like the Vietnam War affected things, and the 80s and the 90s, all the way up until the 2020s. And that was just where the book was going to end. And it was a fun story that was an interesting spin on so many of these things.
I think that's what's so good about stories like this, is they take you to places that you don't necessarily know you're going to love. And like, I was very cynical going into this book, which might also be like a big reason as to why I love it so much.
Spider-Man life story is
life story. But the way that this does something, like, honestly, it kind of reminds me of what Tom Taylor did with Nightwing, except, you know, they didn't like revamp everything, but they did create a brand new status quo for the character. And I think what the problem with some of these runs, it tends to be like, well, you feel like there's a punctuation mark that obviously can't be kept, because next month you're going to have a new run by somebody else.
Yeah.
That matter if this has gone on for 5 or 6 years, like someone else is going to do a new story. And sometimes that's perfectly fine. Sometimes it's like, oh man, like this could have been it for a while and I've been okay. You know? And like, for example, when they initially had Tim Drake and Stephanie Brown literally drive off into the sunset after the detective run, I was like, I don't need to see Tim Drake for years at this point. He's my favorite fictional character of all time. But I'm like, no, this is perfect. And then, of course, DC, doing what they do, completely ruined it. And we'll see how Zdarsky deals with him, because apparently he is a main part of his Batman number 2.
Hopefully it won't be number 2.
Yeah, no kidding. But this is a great book, especially if you're looking for something to read that you don't have to worry about getting lost or anything like that. Like, this is an awesome Spider-Man story. It's a story that completely understands who Spider-Man is supposed to be and just creates a really refreshing, unique spin on it that succeeds where so many others have failed. And I cannot speak highly of this book enough.
Yeah, it's got a great style to the art as well. We haven't really talked too much about that, but it's firing on all cylinders. And again, we don't know how long it's going to last, but I've got every issue in my account and I need to just go and actually...
Yeah, I think there's like 18 at this point.
I think so, yeah. But, Miles... You know, as we close the door on our comic catch-up, sometimes we cover something one week that inspires a whole month of content down the line. And that is what has happened here, because we have talked about Ultimate Spider-Man, the new launch and rebrand of an alternate imprint of a comic book where you have familiar characters in different circumstances. Well, next month... August. Oh, it's not just August. It's absolute August, as we are going to cover the big three of the new absolute DC universe, helmed by, of all comic book writers, Scott Snyder, who was sort of my usher into comic book reading all those many years ago now.
Yeah, 2011, I think it was.
Yeah, the new 52 Scott Snyder Batman with the Court of Owls and all of that.
Court of Owls, so good. New 52 is so bad.
It had some okay moments, but it was mostly...
You're not wrong. It did have some good moments.
Mostly pretty bad.
But it was also terrible. What Scott Liddell did to Tim Drake will never be forgiven.
was the Supergirl Red Lantern a new 52 thing, or was that later? Doesn't matter. We'll talk about that off air.
Don't know.
We'll talk about that off air. I would love to see that in a movie, though. we'll see.
Well, but, we'll see.
But effectively, and we're going to talk about sort of the sort of kickoff point of what this is a little bit next week. But effectively, the Absolute Universe is kind of a take on the Ultimate Universe, but for DC books, where you take the key, one of the vital parts of the character's backstory and remove it, but still keep them being who they are. And at least that's the idea.
Yes. So I, if you thought I was somewhat cynical going into Ultimate Spider-Man, I have not read any of the Absolute stuff yet. Cause I'm so behind in all my comic book reading.
Same.
I am very cynical about the Absolute books, partially because while the original Ultimate Universe started very strong, the DC has not had a great history with starting alternate universe imprints. It's something we were talking about beforehand. All-Star was a complete disaster.
Well, All-Star Superman was good.
Yes, it was. You had one good book. Name another. Because
All-Star...
Frank Miller's book was so bad it killed the whole thing.
All-Star Superman was good.
All-Star Superman is good. It's superlative storytelling, but you also have Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison, who are two of the best best.
For sure. I was mostly kidding about that because All-Star.
I know you were. You had the Earth One books, which were a mixed bag. There was some good stuff in there.
Yeah, I liked Superman, did not like Batman.
You had the new 52. Go ahead.
I was gonna say didn't. Really, I don't think I read Wonder Woman or didn't. I don't remember.
I read Grant Morrison's Wonder Woman. It was.
Oh, you know
right.
what? I did too because he had the purple healing ray and all of that. I just don't remember much of it.
It was all right. It wasn't bad. It was clearly a book that he's been wanting to do for quite some time.
For sure.
You had the New 52 Earth 2 imprint that was out for a little bit.
I actually read a lot of the New 52 Earth 2, and I enjoyed some of that because you had Power Girl Huntress leading the thing.
Some of it was very good. I love the idea that Helena
Superman,
was a Robin.
But regardless, this one is not supposed to replace the main universe like the New 52 was. This is really an alternate telling that we're going
to get an ultimate telling, if you will.
An ultimate telling. And when I say the vital parts of the characters are missing, when we talk about the first one of these books, because we're going to kind of cover them in order of release, we're starting with Batman. And in this, the vital part of Batman's character that is removed is Batman's wealth. So what does that mean to have a Batman that is still supposedly the same character at his core, but without all the money that allowed him to become Batman? That's what we're going to cover next week. We are going to cover Absolute Batman issues 1-6, collectively called The Zoo.
Yeah, we will see. This idea sounds very reminiscent of the before Batman Begins, when Darren Aronofsky was going to do it, I think with Frank Miller, and they had this idea of a poor Batman. I think they went with a homeless Batman.
They've very recently removed Batman's wealth in the comics.
Yeah, but didn't they give it back?
I don't know. I think Alfred's still dead. I don't actually know what's going on with that.
I think Alfred is still dead, but like,
he's
I don't
dead
think
for
that
like
Batman
3 years now.
I don't think he's still poor, but also he wasn't really poor. Like, he gave all his money. He quote unquote gave all his money away, but he still got like every gadget ever.
Yeah,
like,
it's like he still got the keys to all the stashes he has around Gotham. He just can't make any new stuff. You know, it's fine.
Yeah. And so we will see. I mean, look, I do love Scott Snyder as a writer. He has written some of the best Batman stories of all time. He's not my favorite Batman writer. That's Grant Morrison, but
he's
absolutely up there. And
mad respect. Like, it's like 1 and 2 for me.
Yeah. I mean, he's not Grant Morrison. So he's not one of the best writers of all time. Like,
yeah.
It's just like,
it's like Grant Morrison, Denny O'Neill, Scott Snyder. Oh man.
Right. That's kind of my top three. I fully agree. And so I'm it makes me willing to give it a shot because it is a very, very different take. And I'll give them this. Like, this isn't just a specific thing with Batman. Because, like, each and every one of these absolute DC books, like, they brought, I think they knew there was going to be some, like, So Absolute Wonder Woman is written by Kelly Thompson, friend of the show, Kelly Thompson. Who literally, like, a week or two ago won an Eisner for this very book. And then Absolute Superman, written by Jason Aaron, phenomenal writer. And then Absolute Flash, Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, that just started a little while ago.
And then a very famous British, like, Judge Dredd writer, Al Ewing, is doing Absolute Green Lantern that just started. So, like, they are bringing in the big guns for these books. And I think there have been some miniseries for Green Arrow coming up. And then I think Martian Manhunter had by Denise Camp just started. And that one's been getting a lot of buzz because it's just a kind of a cool pop art book.
Yeah,
but I am very interested to see how this goes.
I have heard good things about Same. Absolute Batman specifically and Absolute Wonder Woman. Kelly Thompson just won an award for, but we'll see. So, like I said, next week we kick off Absolute August with Absolute Batman issues 1-6. Now, if you would like to reach me and Miles, you can find us in a number of places. You can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other issue. Look at, listen to me doing comic book stuff. Every other episode of the show that we've ever done, going back more than a decade. That's all I'll say. You can go on Blue Sky, find us at The More You Nerd, and some other social media networks at The More You Nerd. And you can email us, themoreyounerd@gmail.com, themoreyounerd@gmail.com. But, oh, I mentioned Discord. Well, our Discord's not through The More You Nerd. It's through another show called Cosmic Crit. Cosmic Crit is a show that me and Miles and all of our friends do, where we play the tabletop RPG Starfinder. It's awesome, and we're in like our 8th or 9th year of doing that, which is super rad. Go to CosmicCrit.com. In the upper right-hand corner, you can find a link to the Cosmic Crit Discord, where you can join that, find your own tabletop RPG games to play, whether it be live on social media, on you know, video chat, audio chat, whatever, or play by post, etc. Or you can just talk to me and Miles all day. So that's CosmicCrit.com. And now, we end the show, as we always do, with a rousing
nerd
out.
Too nerd for y'all.